Good day, and welcome to our studios here at WMHP. My name is Calvin Tompkins, and it is my distinct pleasure to and privilege to introduce Dr. Colby Colasacco. And we are going to walk through the healthy newborn care process model. So thanks for joining us today.
Sure, pleasure. Thanks, glad to be here.
Great. So tell us a little bit. I know that you're an intensivist, pediatric intensivist by training, so how did you get wrapped up in the healthy newborn care process model?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm not really sure how I got wrapped up in it myself. When I started this job 8 years ago, it's a long time, we shared a lot of the pediatric responsibilities in the hospital between the intensivists and the hospitalists, and as we've grown and have been able to become more subspecialized, we now care for the ICU patients and the hospitalists care for theirs, and the newborns stayed with us.
In my line of work, we bump into the intensivists all the time, so it's good to have you around, and occasionally I badger you with questions, so I appreciate that. So maybe just a global question for the sake of our audience, with regards to the general purpose of a care process model, what benefits do you think that this multidisciplinary effort can impart upon the pediatric services that Mission provides?
Sure. So I think the idea behind the care process models is a great one. It's an effort to standardize the healthcare, in this case of healthy newborns, and also to take an opportunity to make sure that we're providing state of the art care and up to date medical care, and that we're educating our staff to be able to do that as well in a consistent fashion.
One thing that may stand out a little bit to pediatricians and any providers who are caring for newborns is that most of the care process models are centered on a condition or a disease or something abnormal, so it's a little unique that this one is targeted for healthy newborns. And some providers may say, well, we're all doing this already. And it's not that until you get into the care process model document that you really see that there is just a real pretty healthy list of things that need to be accomplished before a newborn leaves the hospital. Maybe you can just speak to the complexity of that and how many team members it involves.
Sure. I think being ICU trained, it's always really nice to come up to the mom-baby floor and see some really healthy newborns, and it does seem like these are more wonderful, healthy bundles of joy than patients of the hospital. But there is a lot of preventative health care that goes on in the first couple days of a newborn's life. A lot of testing that's done, a lot of education that's done, and with our staff and with our families, and physical exams and some laboratory studies, and there is some wonderful guidance through the AAP and other organizations about what and when needs to happen, and so we put the CPM together to make sure that we're providing this care to every single baby that's born at Mission.
Great. So why don't we dive into the CPM document here? I'd like to mention at this point that the care process model document for healthy newborn and as well as many of the other CPMs are available in multiple locations. So they're on the Mission On Demand website. They are also on the Mission Health Partners Connect website, and they are also on the Mission Children's Toolbox, or at least this one is. And so those are three online locations that providers and anybody else can download this document, and we'll be referring to this document throughout this program, so you may want to take a chance to download that and have it in front of you. The one of the first pages in the CPM kind of divvies up the list of tasks temporarily or by time. And so there's a birth to 12 hours and then a 12 hours to discharge delineation for these various tasks. Do you want to take a second and just walk us through this?
Sure. So the first section of the timeline is the birth to 12 hours of life, and there's several things that happen in that short time frame that are really important for the infant's care. The first, of course, is just the resuscitation of the infant through the NRP guidelines if that's necessary, but then there's a lot that happens subsequently once the baby's stable for promoting bonding with the mom, so making sure that baby gets to spend some time skin to skin on mom's chest, and then also for breastfed infants we attempt to let them breastfeed within the first hour of life. With formula-fed babies, we try and get those babies fed in the first 2 hours of life, and then some of the maintenance preventative health care that happens is, for example, the hepatitis B vaccine, although that can be given really later as well. But these are kind of the things that we really want to happen to ensure the infant's safety, but also really promote bonding with mom in the first up to 12 hours of life. That's also the time frame that they're assessing the infant for Apgar scores and that 1 and 5 minute score, and also for their security, applying the security band to prevent infant abduction in the hospital. So those are all really important things to happen early on. And then once baby's stabilized and those bonding and safety things have happened, then we kind of focus on the next phase of the CPM, which is the 12 hours to the time of discharge. And there's a lot that happens in that time frame as well. A lot of education by our staff for families. We have some kind of standardized education. We have a video on the period of purple crying that all families need to watch. Families get counseled on safe sleep practices. They also get some screening done, hearing screening, congenital heart disease screening, jaundice screening, all of these things to help make sure that we're discharging healthy, normal newborn babies.
Great. One thing I just wanted to ask you about, that you mentioned that the Hep B vaccine could be given later. Do you mean later and during the newborn hospital stay?
The current recommendation from the AAP is that it is given in the hospital stay, and so in our CPM it's listed up in the birth to 12 hours because that's when it's kind of on the nurse's radar to give it during that time frame. But it can be given any time during the hospital stay.
Great. I've noticed over the years that I often get questions from parents about the timing of the Hep B vaccine, and of course I follow the CDC and AAP guidelines with regards to the periodicity of that it should be given at birth, but I think it's important for everybody everybody who's coming in contact with the families to be mirroring that same message that the first dose really does happen at birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, and our group definitely tries to encourage, and a lot of people just have questions that they want to be able to ask their physician before they give their infant this vaccine, and so we try and answer those questions for them and encourage them to go ahead and do that.
We can probably help support the nursing staff as pediatricians and family practice providers to just let them know that that will be our recommendation and that they won't be hearing a different recommendation from us. But certainly if there are any other questions about the safety of the vaccine, we're happy to field those questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, part of the whole purpose behind the CPM is really to be consistent, to create consistent care so that the not only the families, but also the nursing staff and all of the staff kind of understand what our goals are and why.
Can you just give us a little overview of the congenital heart disease screening and how that came about and how it was implemented here at Mission?
Sure. So this is a relatively new mandate by the state of North Carolina that all babies receive this congenital heart disease screen after a fairly recent article suggesting that you could, with a very simple, non-painful, easy to do test, you could catch a really large percentage of infants with congenital heart disease in the neonatal period. And so the CCHD or congenital heart disease screen is most accurate if it's done after 24 hours of age. And basically what they do is just check the oxygen saturations in the baby's four extremities. And if there is a large difference between the right arm and the lower extremities, then you have concern that the baby could have a structural heart abnormality. And then we would, if they have a large difference, then they're, quote, failing the test. And so then we would pursue that with an echo.
Great. So I can see that picking up cases that may have slipped by the fetal ultrasound monitoring for whatever reason.
Right, right. Because it's the fetal ultrasound is not a perfect test for cardiac structure and the studies on the CCHD screen show I can't remember the exact number, but it's the vast majority are able to be picked up, especially if it's done after the first 24 hours, because during the first 24 hours that it can be false positive or false negative.
Okay, great. Thanks for that review. What's been your experience and how did it inform the inclusion, the administration of the vitamin K and the erythromycin ointments? Is there an appreciable proportion of families that have concerns about those two interventions?
I think we have a growing number of families that in our area who have questions and concerns about these treatments that are really recommended by the AAP and other organizations for the infant's health. And so with the erythromycin eye ointment, I think families have concerns and questions about the antibiotic is a chemical and what exposures and that sort of thing. But I think that the recommendation is a very clear one that all infants receive this, and the reason is because it prevents a really terrible disease that can lead to vision loss and significant health problems down the road. And then with the vitamin K, that's the other one you asked.
Yep.
About, the vitamin K. I also feel like we have a growing number of families with concerns and questions about this that... again, it's a shot, an injection that has to be given to the newborn. Some families aren't sure that they want to expose their infant to the medication. But I think anyone who's ever seen hemorrhagic disease of the newborn is would be very willing to let their child receive an injection to prevent it, because it also can be extremely severe, as you know.
I think you're right. So this would it be fair to say that this is not a local recommendation, but it's endorsed nationally, and that there are mounds of evidence behind two of these interventions?
I think that's very fair to say that there's a lot of evidence supporting them, and really just the severity of these diseases alone makes the intervention that we're recommending and that national organizations are recommending well worth it, I think.
What about this business with dry cord care? Take us through the last couple of years. I know that our approach here locally as well as nationally has changed a little bit.
It has, and we have a lot of families, of course, that come in who have had babies here a couple of years ago, and then they come in and learn that this is different, and it can be confusing for them. But basically, the short version is that studies have shown that rather than using alcohol to clean the cord, just using water to clean the cord, but really focusing on keeping the cord dry and exposed, allows the cord to fall off faster, and that the difference in the risk of infection of the cord or umphalitis is not significant in this country, where we have good hygiene and everything. And so that's where that recommendation stems from. And we've done a lot of education with our staff, who in turn are the ones who are educating the families about the dry cord care. And so far, I think it's been well received.
Great. There's a number of other screens that are addressed here in the CPM, and again the hypoglycemia and the hyperbilirubinemia are addressed in other CPMs. The two that are kind of front and center to the healthy newborn would be the newborn screening, and as well as the hearing screen. Any changes on these recently?
No changes on the recommendations. The recommendation for the newborn screen is that this is done at 24 to 48 hours of life. We at Mission do it at 30 hours with our bilirubin because we feel like that's the time frame in which those tests are most helpful and accurate. But I think the changes in the environment are such that a lot of families are requesting earlier discharge, and so I think knowing that the newborn screen really isn't accurate if it's done before 24 hours and understanding the reasons that we're recommending those things happen within a certain time frame so that that they're accurate and can predict health problems in the infant accurately if they're done in those time frames is important, and that's why we're recommending it.
These three things, the congenital heart disease screening, the newborn screening, and as well as the bilirubin screen are really best handled after the 24-hour mark.
And certainly the newborn and the CCHD should be done after the 24-hour mark. The bilirubin is we're kind of evaluating the timing of that right now in our care process model. So our recommended timing of that may change, but right now we're recommending that be done at the 30-hour mark, unless providers see jaundice earlier than that, especially in high-risk babies, Coombs-positive babies, or preterm babies. Then we check those earlier for sure.
There are a lot of safety messages and education that the nursing staff helps convey to families during this newborn period. One of them that I just wanted to highlight a little bit was the Back to Sleep campaign and how that's improved our handling of SIDS. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So really important campaign, and we're definitely educating our staff, and they are the ones that are educating families. And this is a on the task list for our nurses. No baby should leave the hospital without the family getting this kind of education for all of the care providers about back to sleep. And also, studies have shown us that not only being taught about safe sleep practices, but also seeing those practices emulated in the hospital really help reinforce that education with families. And so we're definitely trying to promote the education, but also the practice of safe sleep in our newborns while they're in the hospital.
And I think that that's that messaging and that education is something that's hopefully universally communicated throughout the early infancy in the primary care setting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's
repetition is important there for sure.
So I believe we've covered a lot of this. I would I'd kind of save some of the fun stuff for last. And wanted to touch on how we can all support the practice of breastfeeding. I understand that Mission Hospital and the Children's Hospital has been a leader in the state with regards to supporting this practice. So tell us what you know about how that's being handled and supported in the hospital.
So Mission has done an amazing job of educating their staff and in turn those staff educating families about the benefits of exclusive breastfeeding. The mom baby staff has done an amazing job of really taking the time to fully educate their staff and then also educate their staff on how to educate families, and they've made dramatic improvements in the amount of exclusive breastfeeding rate for Mission Hospital. So they started at 48% exclusively breastfed babies, and they have a goal of 75%, and they now pretty much all the time meet their goal of 75% of our infants being exclusively breastfed, which is really outstanding and just goes to show how education and for the staff and also education for our families can really affect the health care of these new babies, because the AAP recommends breastfeeding for so many different reasons, not only good nutrition, but also immunity from community-acquired diseases, and it's something that is really important to the baby's health and really important to Mission and all of the staff working to really encourage families through the frustrating periods of breastfeeding to persist and make that effort for their children, and we've done a really good job of it. I'm very proud of our staff.
I think as we move forward, we're looking for even more ways to really be on the same page about breastfeeding advice for moms. I'm glad to see that it's addressed head on in this care process model, so that we can all be part of it and echoing the same sort of advice.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that we need to touch on? Did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to say it's also been really beneficial for us to take the goals and metrics of our care process model and utilize the dashboard. Are you guys utilizing the dashboard at all for your other CPMs?
We have been.
That we've just been able to take a bunch of data and really track how well we're doing, not only with breastfeeding exclusivity, but also the percentage of infants that are getting their congenital heart disease screens. All of that used to have to be tracked by a person going through individual charts, and now we can find the babies that are outliers and really get to the root cause of the problem and continue to improve upon our practices, which has been wonderful.
Great. I know that one of the goals and one of the processes during the design of a care process model is exactly that, is leveraging our IT capability to monitor the goals set forth by a CPM. And so that's a good way to see where we're at and look for areas to improve. Are there any other metrics that you want to point out here? It looks like there's a list of 8 or so.
I know I think our mortality rate, fortunately, is always low, and I hope that it stays that way. And I honestly don't know our recent readmission rate. I know the birth trauma rate is something that is being followed, and we're currently in the process of using our IT folks to help us track that better, because it's not, right now, I think, a perfect way to, we don't have a perfect way to define and track that in our system. So those are things that we continue to work on, again, to try and continue to improve our goals and care.
Great. So in conclusion, I think what this Healthy Newborn CPM can deliver is really how you started off the program, stating that it really speaks to a standard of care, so that every newborn is going to get these vital elements in this CPM. But I think it's particularly important for families during this time. It's a very exciting time, but it can be an anxious time and in some cases a harrowing time. And so I see that one real benefit is that everybody really is on the same page, regardless of what role you're playing on the mother baby floor. That we're all working from the same default standards. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
No, you touched on our upcoming CPMs with the work for hyperbilirubinemia and hypoglycemia, as well as a lot of work going into the neonatal abstinence care here at Mission. And those are ongoing, and I think that coming to some standardized care for those specific newborn problems will just add to our consistency and efficacy in taking care of these babies.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today in our studio here.
Sure.
Great. I will just mention one more time that the CPM document can be found on Mission On Demand online. It can be found at Mission Health Partners Connect, which is the provider portal. It can be found on the Mission Children's Toolbox, and it can be found on the MHP smartphone app. So they are everywhere on both some password-protected sites, but also available publicly, and we encourage everyone to take a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you.